Welcome to the Prosperity Podcast, fresh, alternative personal finance talk for independent thinkers who prosper outside of Wall Street. Here's your host, best-selling author, Kim D.H. Butler, and no BS money guy, Todd Strobel.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Prosperity Podcast. This is no BS money guy, Todd Strobel. Once again, we're fortunate enough to have my co-host, best-selling financial author, Kim Butler, with us. How are you, Kim?
Very fine, Todd. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, today we're going to be talking about fiduciary versus suitability standard. Now, this specifically applies, I guess, to when you're selecting a financial advisor, you're going to hear these terms, or more than likely, you're not going to hear these terms, because what you're going to hear is the spin promoting one of the other, with probably not acknowledging that even both exist. So before we go any further, Kim, I want your expertise on what those two terms mean and why that's important to an investor today.
Absolutely. And it really does answer the question, how do I find an advisor? And the subset of that is, how do I know that they're good? So an advisor that works from the fiduciary standard is, by law, by all the documents that they sign, by the information that they put forth, supposed to advise clients based on what is best for the client, not based on whatever product it is that that advisor works with or sells. So they're, again, their advice is designed to be best for the client, not having anything to do with whatever product that they sell. The suitability standard, and I'll talk in a minute about where these come from once we're clear on the definitions. The suitability standard says that the advisor only has to make sure that their investments are suitable for the client. So you notice right away that there's a turn. In other words, the fiduciary responsibility, the focus is on the client, whereas the suitability responsibility's focus is on the advisor and the products that they sell. So again, fiduciary, best for the client, irrelevant of what the advisor offers. Suitability, only suitable for the client based on what the advisor offers. And where you're typically going to find fiduciary advisors are in independent firms, ones that are actually owned by the advisor. Sometimes they might be a corporate structure with a lot of advisors beneath that structure. But where they're independent, where they are out there working their advisory practice based on clients and the help that the clients need, where you're typically going to find suitability standard advisors is your larger, well-known names of public firms, typically from the stock market side, your stock brokerage firms that are large and well-known. And again, are only operating from the suitability standard in that they have products to sell, and their job is to find investors that are, quote, suitable for those products. And they typically do that in the form of a risk tolerance questionnaire. And we've talked about how ridiculous we think those are. But you're going to find these people are way more prevalent. I don't know numbers, but my guess is there's only 20% maybe of fiduciary advisors out there, and that the other 80% are suitability advisors. Now, you have insurance agents in the mix, and sometimes they're neither. Sometimes they may also be fiduciary, and sometimes they may be also suitability. So it's just important. You need to ask your financial advisor, do you come to me from a fiduciary standard, or do you come to me from a suitability standard?
Got it.
And that's really where the difference lies.
Just to kind of summarize that in a quick statement. So the person sitting across from you can say that I am required to make sure that the recommendations I make are good or bad for you, versus I am required to make sure that the recommendations I make are the best for you, regardless of whether it is a product I personally offer or not. And if you take a few minutes and think about that, the implications of those two differences are pretty big, aren't they?
Yeah, that's really well said. Good or bad for you versus best for you. And I had a client just the other day. They said, well, you know, I'm looking at this particular product and I said, that's great. Here's my knowledge about it. I don't offer it. I can't help you with it, but I agree it makes sense in your situation. Here are a couple sources that might get you started. And I sent them away. I mean, there was nothing that I could do because my responsibility as a fiduciary advisor is to help them with what is best for them. And I want to lay out the licenses that each of these have because sometimes people will hone in on a particular license and that helps them keep them straight. Typically, fiduciary standard advisors have what's called the Series 65 license. It's known as a registered investment advisory license. And then technically that person is what's called an investment advisor representative. Whereas typically those that operate from the suitability standard only have a Series 6 or a Series 7 license. The Series 7 is the stockbroker, the Series 6 is the mutual fund, and they will have, again, only the requirement of providing investments that are, quote, suitable. And they use the risk tolerance questionnaire to determine that suitability and then sell those investments. Now, there's another category that I want to throw out, and that's called assets under management. In the business, we see it as AUM. And Tony Robbins talks about this a lot in his book called Money, Master the Game. And in Tony's book, he is very pro the fiduciary responsibility. He wants clients to find fiduciary advisors. And that's great. I agree with him 100%. But I have a challenge with some of the information in the book because he focuses very much on AUM or assets under management advisors. And for a lot of people, they don't qualify for that. AUM advisors require usually $250,000. Many of them have $1 million minimums. And there are clients out there that can save $200 or $300 a month that should be helped and deserve to have a fiduciary advisor, but cannot meet the minimum of an assets under management advisor. So again, when you're looking out there in the marketplace, you want to be clear, is it fiduciary? And that's what you want to find, but also, is it the type of advisor that rather than charging a fee for assets under management separates out the investment fee from the advice fee? And you could also call it separates out the investment fee from the education fee, but I truly believe it's advice. Education is freedom and we want to seek education, but then you have to have the wisdom or the advice to know what to do with that education. And that's where Partners for Prosperity comes in because we provide a process that is separate from investments. Now, not all clients want this process, but if you pay for a process separately than you pay for your investments, I think from a client standpoint, that helps you keep clear that what you're getting is advice on the one hand, the pay for a process, and you're getting investments on the other hand. And those two are completely separate. Now, of course, they cross over and interlink in many times, but a lot of the assets under management advisors will provide the advice with the investment. And that mix is something that I don't think should always be mixed, where your fee is often not very clear. And again, because it's muddied in with the investments and the advice, I prefer to separate ours out. We have a specific process. It's called the Prosperity Pathway. It has 5 steps. We charge a variety of different set amounts for it based on the complexity of the client's situation. And then separately, we provide the investments. Now, some clients come to us just wanting the investments. They don't want the full process. That's totally fine. Some people want the full process and want to go do their investing elsewhere. That's totally fine. Some people want both, and that works as well. And when I say process, many times people would call that a financial plan. We've had discussions in other podcasts where we clarify the difference between a financial plan and our process. But nevertheless, I think it's important when you're asking your advisor if they separate out their fee for their process or their financial planning process different from their investment fee or commission.
Super. And again, we're referencing Partners for Prosperity. I should take a minute and give that website. It's partners, the number 4, prosperity.com, and there's a wealth of information that's available to you there. One of the other questions that come in is that, is this the only question or the only qualification we should be using for making a decision on a particular investment advisor?
Well, I think it's always wise to get referred to said investment advisor if you can. So obviously ask your friends and colleagues who they use and start there. And then I think also it's important that you ask that investment advisor who their typical client is, because you want to be their typical client. If their typical client is really large and they own a business and you're a brand new employee starting out with your first job, then maybe that's not the best match. And if it's vice versa, then maybe that's not the best match. Now, clients can fit in without a doubt, so it's not critical, but I think it's very, very important to get a sense of what that advisor's typical client is, because you want to know that you fit that. And then also, I would ask for references. There's absolutely nothing wrong in asking to talk to two or three of the clients that have worked with that advisor. And of course, they're going to give you references that love them, but that's okay. You can at least still get a perspective. And there may be something that the particular reference really likes or really dislikes about their advisor, even though they're still working with them, and that can help you. And then you also really want to be trusting your instincts or your gut. I think that we don't, as human beings, trust our instincts enough. And if you like that person over the phone, and if you get to meet with them face to face, you like that person, I think that goes for a really long way. And then I also think it's super important that both spouses are involved in some way. They don't have to be on every meeting. They don't have to be at every step, but I think it's important that both spouses stay involved in the discussion around money and the use of money, both investments, insurance, and all the other things that go with it, as much as possible.
Super. And then I guess probably one final question that is a biggie is, how does this concept of prosperity economics tie in with your decision of choosing an advisor?
Oh, I love that one. Well, to me, prosperity economics sets apart the typical financial planning discussion from its alternative, which is prosperity economics. So if you want typical financial planning, the kind of thing that says, okay, what age are you going to retire? What's your risk tolerance? Let's look at investments that are typically in the stock market, et cetera, then that's fine. And you will find many, many advisors that do that. But if you have a sense that that typical financial planning route is not the best that it could be, and instead you're looking for alternative products and alternative strategies that don't follow the herd and that get you better results, then prosperity economics can play a role for you. And there is a whole bunch of information on the website that you had mentioned, which is partners4prosperity.com, about the difference between typical financial planning and prosperity economics. And there's an entire point by point discussion about those differences. And we believe that prosperity economics is much more important, much more relevant, much more substantial of a structure to build wealth on than the typical financial planning structure, just because typical financial planning focuses on only on what you need, whereas prosperity economics focuses on getting each of your dollars to do as much as it possibly can, really the most for you, optimizing all of your wealth, whether it's for insurance or for investments or for cash or for cash flow or whatever it is that you want it to have your dollars be doing. Prosperity economics optimizes that.
Super. And I think one of the great ways to be exposed to prosperity economics is certainly maybe through a couple of the books you've written. Can you maybe mention a couple of those before we wrap up?
Sure. Thanks for asking. The biggest one is called Busting the Financial Planning Lies, and it's a couple hundred pages on some of the typical financial planning strategies out there and how wrong they are. A shorter one is called Busting the Retirement Lies, which focuses in just on the 401k plan and the qualified plan, the pension plan, and that arena, and how the idea of retirement, which is a very financial planning oriented idea, is so limiting and wrong, not only financially, but socially and in lots of other ways. And then there's a small one called Live Your Life Insurance, which brings up the life insurance, the use of the life insurance, how it's a great place to store cash, and covers just a few of the prosperity economics thinking. And then also for a good summary, just on our website at Partners for Prosperity are the 7 prosperity principles that we espouse that we didn't create, but have certainly written them down and use them as an opportunity filter for everything that we do.
Super. And again, these books are available on Amazon.com. If you look up Kim, the initial D as in David, H as in Henry Butler, as I believe how the easiest way to find most of those. Again, this is No BS Money Guy Todd Strobel for the Prosperity Podcast. Once again, thanking special co-host Kim Butler. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Prosperity Podcast. To take control of your money and have it work for you, visit us at partnersforprosperity.com. If you liked this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave a review.